is finding out what are the pain points of the client. And once you find those pain points, that is the, what I call the Rosetta Stone to hopefully you winning the job, because then you can focus on those pain points and say, I will be your solution to those. And that's why you should pick us. Because if you don't have that, you're flying blind, because you don't know what's important to that particular client. You don't know, is it the schedule? Is it the cost? Is it the quality? Because you've heard of that tripod, right? It's like cost, quality, schedule. You can't have all three. You can have two, but so there is more. You figure out what are the priorities. And if you're able to speak to those in the proposal, I don't know about you, but like, when I'm having somebody do something on my house or whatever, and they just speak my language, it just feels so good, right? It's just like when somebody speaks your name, it just feels, it sounds so sweet. It's the same way when somebody knows and empathizes with what you need and you feel like you're taken care of.
Welcome to another episode of Tools, Talents, Techniques. I'm your host, Dustin Sutton, and today I have the honor of having on the show a very impressive man who has a really cool journey. And I think especially for people that are in commercial real estate, construction, sales, business development, this will be a great episode. So without any further ado, here he is, Michael Danishvar. How are you, man?
Great, Dustin. How are you?
I'm doing great. I've been looking forward to this. We've been talking about this for quite some time. So just quickly, briefly, in less than 60 seconds, can you just briefly introduce yourself and a little bit about what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on the show, first of all, Dustin. Yeah, we've been looking forward to this for a long time. So I'm Michael Danishvar, Business Development Manager for Turner Construction in San Diego. I've been with Turner for about 15 years and been in construction management with Turner for that 15 years as well.
And so one of the reasons why I've been so excited about this and why I've been so impressed with it, and I know a lot of our listeners and the people viewing online would, because your journey was not a sales journey. You didn't have that experience at first, to my understanding. And you being in construction, you know, and engineering background, if I'm not mistaken, and then turning that into something that you are just doing amazing things with, and you're having an amazing amount of success in. Could you talk a little bit about your origin story and how you originally got into the industry?
Absolutely. That's a great question. First off, I'd like to not think of myself as a sales guy. In fact, funny story, when I first entered the role of construction management and I learned what a business development manager was, I was like, yeah, that would probably not be the person that I'll be, like any other career path other than that. Because I think in the past, business development or sales had a different approach. It was more traditional, more like being a used car salesman where you just sell a product, but don't necessarily have that connection to the service or that genuine connection to the client. So that's why I felt like I never thought I'd find myself in this role, because I was very much an engineer. So my origin story starts in, I was born and raised in San Diego, and I grew up in Rancho Bernard, went to Rancho Bernard High School, went to UCSD, and I studied structural engineering. And I thought I was going to be a structural engineer, you know, doing designs, you know, doing, you know, CAD drawings, figuring out what the optimal structural solution is for a building frame. And I was very good at it. And I had that mindset, and I love number crunching, and I definitely like math and science better than writing and kind of those softer skills. But then I got introduction to construction management when Turner Construction decided to do a presentation on our school campus at like a Structural Engineering Association of San Diego general body meeting. And those types of things, you usually just show up for the free pizza and you're like, okay, I'll listen to what these people have to say. And then I was just in awe at the different portfolio that Turner Construction had done, not only nationally because they're headquartered in New York, but also in San Diego. And me being a San Diego person, that really resonated with me, because they had done some cool projects like the Hard Rock Hotel or the San Diego Convention Center expansion phase two, or some, you know, high-rise condominiums in downtown. And I really felt like if I did a different career path other than structural engineering, it would be in construction management. And if it was in construction management, Turner was the company that I wanted to be with. So I already kind of had my eyes on Turner at that point in time.
And this is when you were in college. This,
this was when I was in college at UCSD, correct. And believe it or not, I didn't get in on the first shot, which I feel like all good things come with, you know, multiple attempts. So first attempt was I went to a engineering career fair, you know, dropped off my resume probably amongst another 100. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to kind of stand out in a stack. And yeah, then I tried again the following year. And luckily, I think I knew somebody that had graduated the prior year and was now working for Turner. And because of that, I was able to make a connection. And looking back on it, hindsight, you learn that when somebody knows you, they're able to kind of probably put you at the top of the stack a little bit. So that was already the first lesson of relationships get you a little bit farther in life.
They matter.
Just kind of, yeah. So that was great. So then I got at least a first round interview. And then once I had the first round interview, then things started rolling into place. Because then when you give me the opportunity to talk and allow me to be myself, that translates. And I was able to get a second round interview and then an internship. And then I started my internship in summer of 2010, which was right before I was graduating with my master's, because I decided to get both a bachelor's and master's like consecutively at UCSD in structural engineering. And I start off doing an estimating, and I learned how to read drawings. I learned how to do quantity takeoffs. I learned how to price projects at a very young age. And those are things that I didn't know anything about in my structural engineering curriculum. I learned how to design a beam, a column, but I had never actually been able to look at a real set of plans. So that was very interesting. So that's kind of where it all started there. Would you like me to keep going from there as the progression goes? Or
Well, I'd like to stop for a minute, because that's surprising to me. And that maybe that's something you only know through experience. I'm surprised that in curriculum, and I'm not trying to like, just maybe it's just UCSD. I don't know. I'm not trying to call them out. But like that you aren't exposed to certain things yet that seem to be foundational to the industry. And for you not to have that exposure in the classroom, that's really interesting. It makes sense, but you know, that jumps out as something that you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm glad you stopped me on that one. Is that I feel like sometimes certain schools, and UCSD is a fantastic school, but it's also very theoretical, their curriculum, right? You have like San Diego State that has a little bit more of a practical kind of approach, and you have UCSD, which is more of a research-based theoretical approach. And I think because of that, maybe they have changed this a little bit since I graduated there. But because of that, I felt like I was very much like, ask me to do a very complex calculus problem or design problem, but ask me to read a set of plans and I've never done it before. Or ask me to like, you know, do something like a cost estimate. I've never done that before. It's actually very analogous to like, I feel what happens to students even in K-12. Like how many students like walk out like knowing, being financially literate, like how to like manage their finances or with their credit card. It's the same thing, right? They could probably tell you like when the Declaration of Independence was signed, but can they like manage a checkbook or, you know, balance a checkbook, you know? So it's like very similar to that.
There's probably some people listening right now, like, what's a checkbook?
Yeah, exactly.
Because we do have some young professionals.
Yeah,
exactly. No, it's funny. It shows you how much times have changed, but you know, they're still the same. So once you get this experience and you're starting to see behind the curtain of what the industry is like, and so this is still an internship, right? You're still in school at this. Okay. Yeah.
So then I finish up in winter of 2010. And at this point, one thing I kind of skipped over, but some of us remember, there was the great financial collapse that happened in 08, 09, and it was very tough to get a job. In fact, some people that had graduated a year or two ahead of me were getting laid off in structural engineering positions. And also construction management was experiencing a very similar squeeze as well. And so I remember there was a little bit of hesitation when it came to like, okay, this is an internship, but is this really going to like translate into a full-time hire? And I remember people were telling me stuff like, oh, well, you're too smart for construction management. You should go back to engineering. You're great. But like, we just don't know. Like, do you really want this? I felt like that was like a little bit of a stall tactic. And I was like, no, I really want this. And I'd like you to make this happen. So once they kind of understood that I was serious about it, then they made some moves. And I think they saw an opportunity there of like, hey, we don't want to let this guy go. Maybe right now we might not have the exact position for him, but let's just take a chance. And I'm glad they did, because here I am 15 years later. So it's like a very interesting situation, how your destiny can kind of be affected by certain decisions that are made. And I like to look at it the same way when I'm trying to hire people, is like, maybe at this point, I might not have the place for this person, but if you see the potential, then it's a good, worthy investment.
Yeah, the potential, the culture fit, the attitude, all those things are so important. Going back to what you're saying about what you learn theoretically, that's another one of those things where you learn at a young age and you say like, oh yeah, attitude matters and use your manners and do all those things. But really, it's true. It's really true. And it shows up in so many different ways in your life and in your career. So my understanding of Turner, and I believe we spoke briefly about this before, is that there is like a path, right? So I mean, there are different programs. So if you are going to rise in the organization, you're going to go, you try out different things within that organization?
Correct. So Turner is very big on, in the beginning of your career, doing rotations in different, you know, whether it's different departments or different projects, so that you can kind of do an exploratory wheel and then figure out what you like, figure out where your strengths are, and then lean in more into those strengths. So for instance, I did a rotation in estimating. I did a rotation in BIM, which we can get into, for 2 years. And then the next 2 years, I decided to go to the field and I was a project engineer. And then after that, I continued to be a project engineer and went to another job, SoFi Stadium, which we can get into that a little later. And then after that, became a project manager and then rotated back to San Diego Airport and then eventually rotated into the business development role that I'm in now.
Okay, so in those roles, and we can touch on whichever one you want to bring up first, was there anything that surprised you that you were like, wow, like early on, like this isn't for me, or this is harder than I thought, or what the hell are we doing, without throwing them under the bus?
Sure. I would say that there was nothing that I felt like I really felt very averse to, but I feel like right now where I'm at, everything that I've done up to this point has led to this point. I really enjoy what I do. So if you ask me, do I like business development better than estimating? Absolutely. Right. So we've come a long way. But if you ask me at that time, I'm not going to complain, because I'm the type of person that will like kind of put my head down, grind, and get through what I need to get through in order to get to the next place. So I'm not considered like a complainer by any means. I just kind of do my thing. But then now that I have something to compare it to, yes, absolutely. I'm very happy where I am compared to where I came from originally. Correct.
Okay. So let's dive into a couple of the things that you put a pin in. BIM. Walk through that.
Sure. So BIM. Somebody might ask, how did you get into BIM? So when I was doing estimating, there was a BIM manager that I worked with that identified me as a person that could potentially be good in BIM. Why? Because I loved following process and procedures. And that's a lot of what BIM is. And he also wanted to grow his BIM repertoire and model-based estimating, because that was kind of more cutting edge and new at the time. So having somebody with an estimating background, but also had the potential in BIM, was what he was looking for. And that's how I ultimately got hired or recruited internally by the BIM manager. And that was interesting, because it started off with, okay, you know estimating, so maybe you can help push the model-based estimating, which we did. But then I also learned a lot of other things. Like I learned model-based scheduling, where you tie the model to a schedule. They call that 4D. And then I also learned clash detection. So where you take the different models, you federate them together, and then you check for clashes with like between structure, MEP, et cetera. And then I became like a trainer, honestly. I would go to different job sites so that I could train the project engineers on how to do that and then kind of transition off. Or I would go be part of a program nationally that's called BIM University that Turner does or used to do, that would help train other BIM people on how to do certain things with software and tools.
Okay, so I think we skipped over this. So for those that don't know, can you explain what BIM is?
Sure.
We jump past that.
That's a good question. BIM is a building information modeling. So in short, I'd like to say, if you've seen a 3D model of a building and using that as a tool to help you build, whether it's looking for clashes, visualization, scheduling, or extracting quantities from the 3D model, that is what BIM is.
So a lot of what I've seen, especially in the prop tech side of things, a lot of like 3D modeling and digital twins and doing that for a scenario. So yeah. Okay, good. Okay. So with that and all the tools that are advancing, is there anything that, because again, tools, talents, and techniques, was there anything on the tool side that you guys used internally that really wowed you, or things have evolved over the years that really help you?
Yes. So one thing that I feel like has evolved very well has been cloud-based saving of the model, right? Because what happens is the best kind of coordination clash detection used to be, okay, everybody weekly uploads their individual discipline models, whether it's mechanical, electrical, plumbing, structural, fire protection. And then there would be a main BIM engineer such as myself that would then merge the models, glue them together, and then see, do these things actually clash with each other? Now, what's happened is you can upload the model to a cloud that's live. And think of it like working in a Google Doc, in which you're not waiting to upload the next week. You can actually see the other person's model file, but not mess it up. And so as you're modeling, you can already be doing the avoidance of the clash, which saves a lot of time. So that's been huge.
Yeah,
that's
cool.
You're not waiting to kind of like cross your fingers and see, okay, are these things going to hit or not? You're like, okay, I can actually see it real time. So that's been a huge development.
Well, that's amazing. Anything else that stands out as far as the technology and the things that you've seen with not just with the BIM, but anything else that Turner's doing that is really pushing the boundaries and leaping into the next?
Yeah, I mean, I probably couldn't even tell you, but I know Turner has a very big, robust innovation department that's doing a bunch of R&D. I know they're doing stuff with AI. I know they're doing stuff with, at one point, they were trying to figure out how to use like these like robot dogs called Spot the Dog that would help with like, let's say, laying things out or, you know, putting a camera on them and kind of doing overall, you know, open space type of application where you can get like an as-built 3D photo real time, almost like Google Earth, where you can kind of like walk through the building at a certain point in time. Like, and so you can have a very like complex, rich history database rather than just like static photographs. So stuff like that we're doing. Also, when it comes to like, you know, tying certain elements, structural elements, you can like QR code them or put RFIDs so you can use that for like production tracking. So you can tie that to the model so that as it's being done in the field, you can be like, okay, this is actually like the model showing how much of the building is done. Lots of stuff like that.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's so much fun to see how everything is evolving in real time. And when you see the impact on the bottom line and to the client and to the customer and to the people that use the space, I feel like the built environment is so ripe for innovation and there's so much to be done. It's exciting.
Absolutely.
So let me, and hopefully I'm not skipping over steps. We can always go back, but I really want to talk about your introduction into the rotation of business development.
Like, sure.
How did that first come to be? And were you hesitant to go into it? Or at this point, were you like, yeah, I want this?
Yeah. So the way it came about, real quick, kind of touching base on, you know, after I was done with BIM, it had been 4 years that I'd been kind of in the office doing estimating in BIM. And I was like, I need to get into the field because anybody that's anybody in construction needs to get field experience. And that was correct. So I got my field experience by, you know, building that hospital in Las Vegas, building that stadium in LA, and then coming back on the Airport Terminal 1 project, which is an awesome project in San Diego. For those of you that fly in San Diego or fly out of San Diego, you probably have been through Terminal 1, which is the main Southwest terminal. It definitely needs a lot of love. It's being replaced, and the first phase of it is going to be opening up this September, and it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, and that's how we originally met. Matt,
yes.
Semick, shout out to Matt Semick, fellow Blue Hen, yeah, with Latitude 33, introduced us. So yeah, that's great. And I'm excited to see that project come to life. So congrats.
Yeah. Yeah, shout out to Matt. I appreciate him for introducing us. So that's where I first met Matt too, was on the Terminal One project. He was the principal in charge for the civil engineering company, Latitude 33, that was overseeing the Terminal One, because we were a design build team. And as part of the design build team, Gensler was the architect and Latitude 33 was the assigned civil engineer. Now that project, just getting a little bit into it, because it is important to as a baseline for what I'm about to say next, I became the project manager for the architectural systems for the terminal, which meant all the exterior and the interior. So anything you can essentially interact with as the end user, which was exciting. And I was going to be on that project for phase one, phase two, which was a 7 to 8 year endeavor starting in 2020 and then ending in 2028. I thought I had my whole, you know, career set. I got a place in downtown. I was sometimes riding my bike to work because it was only a 3 mile ride along the waterfront to the trailer. And, you know, it was a nice little routine. But anytime I think, you know, you feel like you get a little comfortable, life has different plans for you. So I remember sitting and having lunch with my general manager, and her name is Martine Sanders, and she's amazing, great mentor, great leader. And she said to me, "Hey, what are you thinking about doing in the future?" And she kind of started like hinting at some like bigger plans, and I didn't quite know where that was. So one day she pulled me into a room, and I thought I was in trouble. I was like, "Oh,
yeah." You're like, "What do you mean? What do you mean?"
Yeah, because literally somebody that same day had like decided to like leave the company, and that was like my employee, but that person was burned down for different reasons. We had to part ways, and I was like, "Am I in trouble for this?" And she's like, "No, you're not. I was here to talk about you, and I have another thing that I want to talk to you about." And I said, "Okay." I said, "What is it?" And she's like, "Well, my last business development manager got promoted, and that leaves an opening, and I need a new business development manager. You came to the top of the list. And the reason for that is because I need somebody that can have the technical background that you've had." Because at this point, I had about 13 years of experience in the field and pre-con. And then also be a good people person, like wants to build relationships. And she even joked around, "I see you like all over the place. Like you even show up at like happy hours for the other job sites. Like you internally network." And I was like, "Okay, you got me there." So she was very good at kind of identifying that potential, even though I didn't see it, which was what I thought was interesting, that she thought like, "I think you can be good in this role," even though I didn't see that. So I said, "Okay, how long do I have to think about it?" And she said, "You know, as long as you want, no rush, but I'd like to know maybe hopefully in a week." So I thought about, you know.
No rush, but let me know. But
Yeah. And exactly. And I got back to her and I said, "I'm in." And I know that this would be a complete departure from what I was doing, which was the stability of being on an actual project. Because in operations, we call it, it's very black and white, because you have a project, you're on it, you're here for the start, you're here for the finish. It's very tangible outcome. But business development is not a tangible outcome, because you can put your heart and soul into something, which is a lot of people don't appreciate it because people think it's just like wining and dining and playing golf. But it's a lot that goes into it. It's a lot of research, a lot of analytics, and then you develop what you call like your strategy. And then you are managing essentially a set of leads, like a portfolio that is similar to almost like an investment mix. And you're going to decide as a company, like, what are you going to focus your efforts on? Because you can't be everywhere at once. I think that's the first thing, is setting up your strategy. And then once you do that, then you can do targeted pre-sale efforts, we call it, which is meeting with clients and designers and owners reps and CMs that are aligned with those potential opportunities that you see on the horizon, so that when the time comes and they're ready to go out to bid or ask for proposals, you already know about it, you already have a team, and you have a win strategy. And then you execute by putting that proposal together, you know, getting the team rallied up behind you to put that proposal together, prepare for the interview, and hopefully wow the client into a point where if it's best value selection, they'll say, "I want to pick Turner Construction." And once that happens, then you do the contract negotiation. And as soon as that's done, then I hand it off to operations. And my job is at that point complete.
When you moved into that role, Was there a specific training program that you had for the sales process and the business development process?
There was, and there is and there isn't. So there was a sales training that I had to go to, a national one that they send a lot of the business development managers and some business development engineers to in Colorado. And that was probably a month or two into my stint in business development, which was nice. And that sales training kind of talks about, you know, what they call like a sales funnel. And really your goal at that point, proper sales, is finding out what are the pain points of the client. And once you find those pain points, that is the, what I call the Rosetta Stone to hopefully you winning the job, because then you can focus on those pain points and say, I will be your solution to those. And that's why you should pick us. Because if you don't have that, you're flying blind, because you don't know what's important to that particular client. You don't know, is it the schedule? Is it the cost? Is it the quality? Because you've heard of that, a tripod, right? It's like cost, quality, schedule. You can't have all three. You can have two, but so there is more. You figure out what are the priorities. And if you're able to speak to those in the proposal, I don't know about you, but like when I'm having somebody do something on my house or whatever, and they just speak my language, it just feels so good, right? It's just like when somebody speaks your name, it sounds so sweet. It's the same way. When somebody knows and empathizes with what you need and you feel like you're taken care of.
Yeah, otherwise, and I use the analogy a lot of times at sales and of like a auto mechanic and bringing a car into the shop, right? And sometimes if you bring something in and so somebody has a problem or whatever, they bring the car in and all of a sudden you start throwing like, oh, all this and this is how much it's going to cost. It's like, but you didn't even look under the hood. Like, you don't even know. You didn't even look. So you got to look under the hood and understand like what's going on here before you give them an actual solution. And, you know, that's a process. And, you know, it's an art too. So there's an art to it of learning what their objections might be ahead of time. But when you know their priorities, you can pretty much prep to overcome any objections, and tying their pain points to your uniqueness, like the things that you do really well. So when it comes to making the choice, it's like, well, this is what we're trying to solve, and they're the only one that really understands that. So yeah, you nailed it. How much of your engineering experience, and the reason that I asked about the sales training, because the way you broke it down, it's almost very technical too. So it's an art, but it's also a science. How much of your experience in engineering came into place of you developing your own style of sales and your own process of sales?
That's a great question. And yes, I probably don't want to give the false impression that it was just training. You're right. It was a little bit of training and a lot of experience. And a lot of that experience is just trial and error. And it's all personalized. What I really liked about my supervisor, Martine, is she let me kind of make my role my own, because she realized that not every person is the same how they approach business development. Somebody might be very approaching exactly like you said, more technical, more as like a science. This is the strategy. These are the different things that we're going to do. There's the other extreme, which is completely like not as much structure. It's all relationships based, like wheeling and dealing. I'd like to think of myself somewhere in the middle. And I feel like what my style has been is I bring my genuine self to the table, right? I try not to sound pushy at all. I try to be like, hey, let's have an open conversation. I want to learn about you as a person first. And then let's talk about your job. Let's talk about your pain points. And maybe we can help you out and just come across very authentic and just be myself and not be too pushy. And that seems to work for me. Also, what I do a lot of is I try to be very helpful in times where I don't even get any direct benefit, because people remember that. And they will be like, okay, this was not just transactional. This person was the real deal. And when that opportunity comes, I know who I'm going to call. And I feel like it's all about playing into that long game of, like I said before, relationships, that's important. So I'd like to think my style is just being myself. I never am going to be a salesman. I never will be a salesman. If you probably put me in like, you know, used car lot, I'd probably be the worst salesman ever, but I will be like a person that will bring my genuine self. And to your point, I think one of my strengths is I actually do have technical background, which is what my supervisor said. So I'm actually able to talk the talk. So when we're talking a little bit about, you know, schedule or cost, I know a little bit about everything to be dangerous. You know, I'm not going to claim like I'm the best master builder by any means. There's people who are way better builders than I am. But at the same time, I also know more than the average bear when it comes to construction. I can speak to that. So that allows me to have a little bit more credibility when I'm talking to somebody, which helps bridge that gap. Because I don't know if you've ever talked to certain BD people, and I'm not going to mention any names, in some of my, you know, maybe competition, they just are pure salespeople. And you're like, okay, I don't want to talk to you. I want to talk to the person that's actually going to build my job. I help bridge that gap. So, you know, eventually we'll get there, but I help develop that trust up front.
Yeah, and that's so huge. And going back to the relationships, and I had a manager, actually, he was like my manager's manager years back when I was working at a REIT. And he told me one time, I had some issue, and I came in, I was like, oh, there's a trust break over at this property, and I don't know what to do. And so he was like, oh, like we'll figure it out. And he was so calm about it. And we went into this meeting and we kind of scheduled something out and started talking to people. And he said something to me. He's like, you know, similar to what you're saying about just knowing enough to be dangerous. He's like, listen, I don't know everything about roofs. If I did, I'd be a roofer. I don't know everything about HVAC. If I did, I'd be an HVAC guy. He was like, but I know enough to know when it's time to call in somebody else to get their opinion. He was like, so when something happens, like, you know, why is there this, you know, 60 mil TPO on this? Like, that doesn't quite jive. And maybe there is a reason. I don't know. But he's like, let's go talk to somebody who knows. And having those relationships and being able to just pick up the phone and say, hey, you got a minute? I want to talk through this, is huge. And you talk about, you know, those people that answer the questions of like, oh yeah, this and that, they become a trusted resource. So when it is time to do a roofing project in their area, guess who gets the first call? So that resonates deeply with me and my experience. But you also said something about you can't be everywhere all at once. You seem to be everywhere all at once though. Like you go to a lot of events, you're involved with a lot of organizations. Have there been any organizations or groups that you've found especially helpful in your career development and outreach? I know like there's NAOP, there's ULI. Are there anyone that jump out to you that you're like, hey, these are ones that I really enjoy being a part of?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we met at a NAOP golf tournament. So I'd say NAOP is probably at the top of my list when it comes to meeting people, commercial real estate, very well organized group. I also really enjoy DBIA, Design Build Institute of America. And then I recently joined in the board of AMFP, which is the Association of Medical Facilities Planners. They opened up a chapter that just launched in end of June. So making a shameless plug there for people that want to join our growing chapter. And that's everybody that is kind of in the healthcare building industry, because healthcare is big in San Diego and continuing to grow. So that's been pretty powerful because I get to meet a lot of people that are kind of the who's who on both the building and the owner side of healthcare. And then ULI has been great, made some good connections there, Urban Land Institute. And then another one that I'm on the board of is ACE Mentor, which is mentoring high school students to join the architecture, construction, engineering industry, which is what ACE stands for. And that's been interesting because that's more of like a volunteer organization, but you also get some good exposure and networking out of that too. So you're not only able to, you know, do good to the community, but also help kind of get exposure to the building industry. I do want to say one sentence that I think is interesting that stuck with me is that they say your net worth is your network, right? Or your network is your net worth. And that's true, because when I first started this out, I started from scratch, and that was the beauty of it. It was very organic. I didn't really know too many people outside, because when you're on a job site, I feel like you're sequestered. You're kind of just like, you know, head down and you don't really get out in the industry. But then when I started to, you know, be very open-minded, I was very big on saying yes to everything. I think now I have to probably start saying no and being a little bit more selective. But by saying yes to everything, it helped me kind of rapidly grow my Rolodex to the point where now it just a little bit more automated and how people like now reach out to me and my name has gotten out there and I can kind of be more selective on like who I want to meet with or how I want to spend my time. But where I want to go with that is that your point was perfectly said, was I don't know everything, but what I do know is who to call. And that makes me much more valuable when I'm like, if I'm going to solve this problem for somebody else, let's call X, let's call Y, let's call Z. And that gives you now a much more robust turnkey solution than me trying to just kind of fake it till I make it by myself.
Yeah, that's huge. But one thing I want to go back to, what you talked about, the ACE program. I believe that's what you said it was.
Correct.
This also ties into what you said earlier about, you know, not getting the in college, not having like the real world experience. So now that you've had that and you know that, now you can go back and teach others and say, you can be that bridge of that information of saying like, yeah, this is the way it really works. And these things are important, but this is the big, and then you kind of can fill in the middle. So yeah, that's amazing. And especially when you do things that, you know, there's no immediate realized benefit for yourself, but you start doing these things to help others. It's amazing how much it comes back to you. It's like karma. It really does.
Yeah. Like I'm actually jealous of some of the students that are getting the mentorship in high school that I wish I got, because I'm like, you guys are going to be way ahead when you like hit the ground running. When you graduate college, you're going to know a lot more than I did. So that's, yeah, a good way of giving back.
Yeah. So, and this is not me bringing you into the manager's office, but what's next? Like, well, I mean, I know you're good at what you do. You love what you're doing. Like, what's next for you? Is there anything else? Are you just going to keep doing this while you're hitting home runs?
Appreciate that. No, that's a great question. There is a plan. The plan is that hopefully I will, in the next 2 or 3 years, continue to do this, because I think it took a year or two just to figure out what way was up and get my stride. So now I want to take advantage of that stride. And even my general manager recognizes that. She's like, yeah, keep doing what you're doing, because now you finally have gotten the hang of it. And after that, I'd love to take some of these clients that I've built relationships with and potentially be a project executive or account manager for their project. So go back to essentially operations. So still do sales, but now sales is now one part of what I do rather than the only thing I do. So kind of going back to operations, but helping kind of a client get their project vision to life and having a team working underneath me. That's what I'd like to do, is basically be a project executive.
Well, if your past is any indication of your future, I have no doubt that you will do it and you will be wildly successful at it. Before we take off, is there any parting words of wisdom or anything that you want to share? And I'll include, you know, your company and your LinkedIn bio. I'll include all of that in the show notes. But is there anything you want to leave our audience with?
Yeah. I mean, my role is sometimes can be very tough, right? Because you're losing more than you're winning. And the thing that I will, I guess, part with is, you know, keep being persistent, you know, keep having a good attitude. And if you're persistent, you have a good attitude and you work hard, that will prevail and you will be rewarded in the end. So if you do feel discouraged, Sylvester Stallone would say, you know, keep punching, right? So that's what I'd like to part.
All right. Keep punching. Michael, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Congrats on all your success. And I look forward to continuing the relationship, man.
Absolutely, Dustin. Thank you very much for having me and have a great day.